He boarded the craft, was taken to an elevation of about 229,000 miles and was able to view the Earth from this altitude through a section of the ship's wall which became transparent. He carried on a combined audible and telepathic communication with his space friend who was located in the control ship. They also played music for him. At one time he caught a view of the control ship, and of several sources. He also obtained a magnificent view of outer space. He received further valuable information regarding the spaceships and the present situation on Earth which brought them here. During this trip he was put through a certain type of initiation and returned to Earth with a mark on his body, which later served him as an exceedingly necessary and solid reminder of the reality of this experience. His fourth experience was an especially memorable one for him because it brought him face to face with his space friend for the first time, and he was able to give his friend a name. This contact occurred on August 2, 1952, only 10 days after his saucer trip and at approximately the same location. It was late evening and he was walking toward his home. He heard solid footsteps approaching and was greeted by the owner of the voice he had heard in his previous contacts. His space friend was taller than Angelusai, well-built and wore a tight-fitting uniform without seams. However, he did not appear to Angelusai to be in a state of complete human, material, solidity, as both the visible outline and color seemed to waver slightly. Angelusai wondered at this and was told that he was seeing an approximation of the space being. The communication this time centered mostly on the critical situation on Earth. Angelusai was told that our Earth is often called the home of sorrows, and that we face a crisis which in history will be called the Great Accident. The space people are here to assist us all they can, within the bounds of cosmic law, during this critical period. Then came this outstanding pronouncement showing that the space people have no illusions as to the Diffie 230 cult of awakening mankind from its three-dimension dream. Few will believe or even hear your account of our meeting. Your story will in no way change conditions upon Earth. Neither will any actual earthly event be either hastened or retarded because of our meeting. At most your story will give only greater faith and inner conviction to the few. But it is an important few. Angelusai's fifth experience came late in October of 1952. In this case he ran into his spacer friend at the Greyhound bus terminal dressed in a smart business suit, a felt hat, and carrying a briefcase, the epitome of a successful businessman. Angelusai states that the purpose of this brief contact was to show him, once and for all, that space beings can appear and function as solid beings when they wish to. In his other contacts they appeared in a semi-solid condition. Angelusai's story of his experiences offers to the reader an opportunity to study the problem which the space people themselves evidently face in trying to reveal their own true nature to the men of Earth. Even with a spiritually advanced individual like Angelusai, they had a problem in revealing themselves to him without his slipping into doubts, fears, and even worrying about his own sanity. This is no laughing matter. Many OSC messages state that the greatest barrier to Earthman's entering outer space is the psychological barrier, his uncontrollable fears when he finds out how different outer space is, and the actual danger of insanity. Modern psychologists might be interested in studying Angelusai's efforts to convey to others the knowledge he has received from the space beings and the ridicule and scorn which not only he but his wife and children have to face. Those who complain that the space people are not doing all they should in revealing themselves should study these things. 231. Now in order to illustrate something of the exalted nature of the space beings whom Angelusai has contacted and the high quality of these communications and the information he has received from them, we have his permission to quote the following random passages from his remarkable book. Man believes himself civilized, but often his thoughts are barbaric and his emotions lethal. The aggressive men of Earth want our scientific advancements. For these they would shoot our crafts from the skies, if they could. Already man's material knowledge has far outstripped the growth of brotherly love and spiritual understanding in his heart. Therein lies the present danger. To add to the destructive phase of man's scientific knowledge is not permitted. We are working now to turn that knowledge into constructive purposes upon Earth. Earth's evolution is evolution through pain, sorrow, sin, suffering and the illusion of physical death. Every person upon Earth and its adjoining planes of manifestation are definitely arrayed upon either the positive side of progression toward good, or the negative side of regression toward greater evil. At this moment we weep with you for Earth and her children. For all of its apparent beauty, Earth is a purgatorial world among the planets evolving intelligent life. Hate, selfishness and cruelty rise from many parts of it like a dark mist. Believe me, all evolutions are not similar to Earth's despite the present belief of your scientists. His, man's, one purpose upon Earth now is to attain reunion with his immortal consciousness. All intelligence is capable of space travel, can read thoughts and see emotions. You can rise above the inadequacies of your physical body. Many have actually seen our discs. Some have seen us, 232, clairvoyantly. Others have communicated with us clairaudiently. Still others recognize the truth of our existence and greater scope of our being through the intuitive perception. But as far as official proof of ourselves for which so many clamor, we cannot offer that. Official proof of the existence of our discs will come. But for us to attempt physically to contact mankind through any so-called authoritative source would be only useless and possible disastrous for them. Nearly all three-dimensional beings have no concept of, nor could they possibly understand, extra-dimensional beings. We see the individuals of Earth as each one really is, and not as perceived by the limited senses of man. Also, we hope to give men a deeper knowledge and understanding of their own true nature and a greater awareness of the evolutionary crisis facing them. Your teacher has told you, God is love, and in these simple words may be found the secrets of all the mysteries of Earth and the worlds beyond. Our discs, or sources, as Earthmen term them, are in your space-time frame as harbingers of mankind's coming resurrection from the living death. In closing our chapter on Orfeo Angelus, I may we say that we are grateful indeed to have met this sorcerer, and we sincerely hope that our humble efforts in this book may help open the treasure chest of his experiences to others who are interested. Chapter 29, Religion, Philosophy and the Flying Saucer's Intense Interest. The reason we include this chapter is that during our pilgrimage we found that many people were interested in saucers primarily because of religion, philosophy or prophecy. If this surprises some of our readers, we should like to say that we found saucer interest about equally divided into three categories. First, there was a group whose interest was primarily astronomical or cosmic. They wanted to know if other planets were actually inhabited and all about what exists in outer space. Second, there was a group whose interest was mostly technical or scientific. They wished to know how spaceships work and how they could be duplicated on Earth. A third group, however, wanted to know if there exists a definite relationship between the present space phenomenon and certain religious or philosophical teachings, and also whether these signs and wonders in the sky are related to various prophecies. We found a lively interest in such things. Does the coming of the space people confirm or justify certain long-cherished religious or prophetic beliefs or expectations? How do the space people think in regard to certain religious matters? What will be the impact of saucer revelations on religions? What about prophecies of destruction or of salvation or of a new age? These were the type of questions which seemed to be of intense interest to about an ethnic of those who were seriously studying saucers. Early in our pilgrimage we were compelled to recognize this category of saucer interest, and we therefore made a special effort to study the views of various individuals and, 234, groups along this line. We found numerous devout and religious souls who, although they shunned publicity, were nevertheless avid students of the religious implications of the saucer phenomena. These people were quietly putting two and two together and were making up their own minds and arriving at their own interpretations of events. We also studied many OSC messages which referred to saucers from a deeply religious point of view. After much listening and weighing of this type of data, we pieced together our own New Age view of the religious, philosophic and prophetic implications of the coming of the sources. From this viewpoint gained during our pilgrimage, we shall now endeavor to answer, to the best of our understanding, many of the questions which seemed of major interest to those we met. If some of these answers prove disturbing to certain readers, please remember that everyone is free to develop his own interpretation of source phenomena. Our work has been that of private researchers, and we have tried to remain as open-minded and detached as possible. However, we cannot escape the feeling that as the truth about sources and their implications gradually dawns on humanity, the impact is going to be overwhelming. We feel that the truth is going to exert a profound effect upon every branch of human knowledge and belief, and the religious and philosophical branches of knowledge are no exceptions. As we see it, everything that can be shaken is now in the process of being shaken, and in the end nothing will survive but cosmic actuality. The following represents our estimate of this interesting situation. The vast perspective of the space beings. In referring to the space beings in this chapter, please note that we are again referring to the planetary guardians and those advanced beings in outer space who are concerned with this planet and its evolution and welfare. We are not referring to lesser beings or those whose evolution is less, 235, advanced than our own. Let us note that the perspective of these space beings is vastly greater than our own because their view of life is not limited to the three-dimensional octave. Some of these advanced beings, but not all of them, have experienced Earth life, and therefore they understand the predicament we are in better than we do. They have risen above Earth life, and they know how this can be accomplished. Many of them are our elder brothers and sisters, and they say that we ourselves originally lived in a higher dimension of life and that we are on the way back home. Because they understand how we got this way, they also know the way back. In this new age they will actually help many who have learned Earth's lessons aright to progress permanently out of three-dimensional consciousness back into the freedom of the frequencies. See also chapter 25. Their ways are not our ways. Their viewpoint is cosmic and not human. Bearing this clearly in mind, we shall now answer pertinent questions which we have been asked. Are their space beings religious? Are their space people religious? And do they believe in God? This question is often asked. The best answer we have found is that they do not divide cosmic knowledge into divisions as we do and label them religion, science, etc. To them there is no such thing as a religious truth separate and distinct from a legal truth or an astronomical truth or a scientific truth. Truth is. It is an undivided whole. Our efforts to divide it lead to mental and moral chaos. They are not believers, they are knowers. They have learned to merge individual consciousness with the all-knowing mind or cosmic consciousness, and thereby they can arrive at whatever phase of cosmic truth they wish to know. They recognize a great central source of life, power and consciousness, but they realize themselves as an integral, if infinitesimal, part of this whole. They say we on Earth like to talk about truth, but we live it only to a very, 236, small degree. They both understand cosmic truth and live it. They are obedient to cosmic law. They cooperate with all-pervading life. To them, man in all phases of life represents a universal brotherhood. In this cosmic sense they are religious and recognize a central source of life. Do they believe in Jesus Christ? But, asks the Orthodox Christian, do they believe in Jesus Christ, and have they been saved? Without any desire to offend these highly respectable Orthodox and doubtlessly well-intentioned questioners, the only cosmic answer we know is that the question itself displays an unfortunate ignorance of the nature of these evolved space beings who are themselves great enough to be the guardians of entire planets and solar systems. These beings do not need suffering. They are already part of an advanced evolution. Throughout billions of years of Earth time and innumerable civilizations, the planetary guardians have participated in the activity of sending great masters and teachers to the Earth and to other planets whenever it was necessary. Naturally, they believed in the virtue and the ability of all these great teachers to fulfill their missions on the planets to which they were sent. In outer space there are entire races of advanced beings or masters who are qualified to act as teachers to the evolving civilizations of various planets. There are billions of inhabited planets in various stages of evolution, and many teachers are needed. In our preoccupation with the Earth, it is easy to forget the vast needs of the universe. As to the teachings of the Master Jesus, they say that mankind has never lived them nor have the true teachings been taught. They were based on cosmic law, and had we followed them the world would not now be in its present critical cosmic situation. Do they die? In order to give a proper answer to this question, we, 237, must understand what category of space beings are referred to and what is meant by the word die. Do we define dying as the mutation in which individual consciousness ceases its energizing of a human physical body, then space beings of a physical or three-dimensional category living on other planets do die. However, we understand that this mutation occurs only on three-dimensional planes, not on the higher planes of life. On some planets the duration of the body or the body span is less than on Earth. On others it is over 10 times greater. In fact, the space beings state that the body span of man on Earth in certain ancient civilizations was far greater than it is at present. Physical bodies have endured from 500 to over 1,000 years. They also state that if we understood how to treat our Earth bodies aright, even today they would last a minimum of 250 years. Another fact worth noting is that it is not absolutely necessary for an individual to depart from a planet and leave his physical body behind him to disintegrate. Some individuals learn how to take their bodies with them. In our Christian Bible, Enoch, Elijah and Jesus all took their bodies with them. It is our understanding that during this new age certain advanced Earthmen will, with the help of their space brothers, learn how to accomplish this by raising the vibratory frequency of their physical bodies, which after all are constituted of energy. It is our slower down vibratory frequency that binds us to physicality. The advanced space beings do not die and leave bodies behind them because their manifestation of life is different, and body manifestation is always under the control of consciousness. By conscious control they create the body they wish for any environment. They control its size, weight, shape and other qualities. Thus there is no problem of body durability in the higher spheres of life. As a matter of fact, there is no such thing as death on any plane of consciousness. Leaving one plane coincides with arriving on another plane. We have used the term, 238, body span instead of lifespan because the lifespan is infinite. Death is one of the most misunderstood phenomena connected with life. The term is a misnomer. Individual life is an individualization of the eternal source of life. It is individual consciousness, and its life's path cannot be extinguished. It is independent of bodies or planets. Individual consciousness can go through all sorts of experiences, and it can exist in many different states, both physical and otherwise. It can enter a dream state, or it can sleep and even go into periods of suspended animation, either for days or eons of what we call time. It can awake and live on the surface of planets, or it can live in the higher frequencies of outer space. It can manifest form, or it can exist in an energy state. It can appear instantly in the most distant places of the universe by teleportation. It can progress, or it can retrograde in cosmic evolution. Consciousness is the indestructible I am with unlimited freedom except for the cosmic law of cause and effect. It is free to initiate almost any cause, but it is responsible for the effect. Therefore, it finally learns to use its freedom and its powers of creation constructively and harmoniously, with due regard to the creations of others. Thus in truth none of us die. Do they believe in re-embodiment? This is such a controversial subject that at first we felt disinclined to attempt to answer it. However, our own curiosity regarding it led us to pay particular attention to it during our pilgrimage, and we decided it would not be keeping faith as reporters to our readers if we failed to report our findings. If these findings tread unkindly on certain cherished orthodox beliefs, we are sorry, But we feel that all of us must expect some of our pet concepts to go by the board in this new age as communication with outer space changes belief into cosmic knowledge. The truth about many beliefs is now in the process of being revealed to mankind. Once again, the space beings are not 239 believers but knowers. With reference to re-embodiment, we understand that it is one type of life experience. Also, it can be a very unprogressive type of life experience, when one stays on the wheel of re-embodiment life after life for thousands of years. Many of us have lived innumerable Earth lives, but our memory of them is blacked out with each new embodiment. Certain gifted individuals have the ability to discern these past lives of their own and even of others. The higher space beings also have this ability. In order to progress back into the higher frequencies of life, we must get off the wheel of re-embodiment on Earth. In this new age, the space beings will assist many who desire this. Fortunately, they state, and we regard this as very important, that re-embodiment is not universal and it is not necessarily automatic, nor are there any immutable time periods for it. It depends on the individual. It is a matter of individual consciousness and of conscious control. Individuals can and do progress beyond it. Any strong or powerful emotion such as hate, love or intense desire for the things of this earth tends to bring an individual back to earth through the cosmic action of re-embodiment. Conversely, a willingness or desire to let go of three-dimensional earth life in all its aspects for something higher is a potent factor in progress toward higher dimensions of life. Individual desire is a very powerful thing in determining individual life experience even in cosmic realms. No wonder that one of the greatest teachings of the space people is that of emotional control. This is our finding upon this subject. If others disagree, that is their privilege. Are space beings and space phenomena mentioned in the Bible? This question intrigued us. We discussed it with many New Age thinkers and came up with some interesting ideas. A number of saucer students feel definitely that the Bible contains many references to both space beings and to space 240 phenomena. For example, they regard the following passage from 2 Kings 2:1-1 as referring to a spacecraft experience, and it came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that, behold, there appeared a chariot of fire, and parted them both asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Others think that the first chapter of Ezekiel refers to flying saucers when it speaks of a wheel in the middle of a wheel. They regard this chapter as describing either a sighting or a contact with flying saucers made by the ancient prophet over 2,500 years ago. More interesting still was the fact that many students believe that the Master Jesus was a spaceman in the very highest sense of the word. That is, he came to Earth from a higher frequency of life to live among men and help teach them the way back home. They believe when he spoke of many mansions, he referred to the many inhabitable planets and to life in outer space. Like other advanced spacemen, he was a master of energy, which means that he was a master of what we call matter, space and time, and he controlled the qualification of universal energy to produce certain effects. When he turned water into wine, this was in keeping with his mastery over universal energy out of which all things are made. When he healed the sick, he changed the discordant or misdirected qualification of life energy by the sick person back into harmonious qualification. When he walked upon the water, he employed a form of levitation. When he fed the multitude, he employed the principle of precipitation. When he entered a ship, as described in John 6:21, and immediately the ship was at the land with air they went, he employed the cosmic principle of teleportation or instantaneous travel. When he passed through closed doors, he transcended temporarily and then emerged, the same cosmic principle as is used by spaceships. In his ascension, he raised the vibratory frequency of his body until 241. It entered a higher dimension of life above the range of awareness of our physical senses. These students also feel that the spaceships have come in accordance with biblical prophecy and that the angels and heavenly host of the Bible correspond to the space beings. After a period of tribulation on earth which has already begun and a great house cleaning, they believe there will come a great millennial period when the meek, the peaceful souls who are obedient to the highest cosmic teachings, will indeed inherit the earth. In view of the necessity of our reconciling religion and science, we feel that these views are indeed noteworthy. How do the space beings view our religions? The answer should be obvious to independent thinkers. On the earth today there are approximately 280 different and distinct religious sects, each with its own view of truth, its own dogmas and its own beliefs. And how do these groups view one another? With tolerance and brotherly love? No. Most of them eye each other with superior contempt, each one claiming some superiority of knowledge, power or deific favor, or some exclusiveness or monopoly of truth or salvation. What a picture from the cosmic viewpoint of the great space beings is our failure in unity, charity and brotherhood. You believe my way and then wish I'll have unity and salvation is the dictum of each individual group. It would be amusing, if it were not for the fanaticism, violence and tragedy behind this picture of religious intolerance, disunity, exclusiveness and superstition. They tell us that many great teachers have been sent to Earth but that this civilization has never lived up to their teachings. For example, the true teachings of the Master Jesus they state have never been taught to the people as a whole. They have, however, been known and taught in a few retreats in the world known only to certain advanced souls. These teachings combine science and religion and include mastery over energy and matter. They also point out that Earth religions have as a whole failed to save man from his own destructive creations. During past ages, Earth religions have been responsible for some of the worst wars and greatest crimes in history. What we can learn from the space beings. Open-minded religionists and thinkers can learn a great deal from the space beings. For one thing, they can be assured of the continuity of life and the cosmic fact that life is consciousness which never dies. There exists an important relationship between consciousness and outer space and between consciousness and energy or matter. Time also is a phenomenon of consciousness. Consciousness is superior to all, but it must have something to be conscious of. It therefore creates energy, and out of energy it forms things to be conscious of. This creative activity of consciousness takes place in an eternal now and an eternal here which in three-dimensional life appear to be time and place. Man is a creator on every plane of consciousness. Our failure to recognize this cosmic truth is little less than appalling. Every thought and every feeling of man right here on Earth creates an activity in space. What we call nature gives back to man his own creations. As we sow, so shall we reap. This is the cosmic law of cause and effect, and it has tremendous cumulative effects throughout cycles of time. In the higher life of the space beings, they do not permit themselves to think or feel anything which is discordant because they know it will manifest as reality or experience. They are masters because they control consciousness. On Earth we have both individually and collectively lost control of our thoughts and our feelings, and thus we constantly create the discord in which we live without realizing that we are the creators of it. This is a bitter pill for the human mind. But we now face the cumulative effect of centuries of destructive human thoughts and feelings. We are beyond human help, and that is why millions of space beings have gathered to help us. Consciousness operates in many octaves of vibratory frequency, and physical life represents a blackout of consciousness, a narrowing of awareness and memory to three-dimensional life only. The way out of physical life back into the higher dimensions is through a waking up process or a release of the fixation or hypnotic state which Earth life represents. The space beings will assist those who long for such release in this new age. Thus their coming is recognized as a thing of joy and salvation by those who desire to progress on a cosmic scale. Metaphysics and cosmic truth. As we see it, the development of modern metaphysics is supported by the space beings as a great step upward toward cosmic truth. It represents a noteworthy bridging of the gap between science and religion, a gap which for centuries has been the difficulty with many orthodox religions. In many respects, the scientists of today seem nearer to cosmic truth than the orthodox religionist. The trouble with the scientists is that many of them are out of balance, and their progress in cosmic love and wisdom lags far behind their growing mastery of matter. All the modern religious teachings which emphasize the science of religion or the I am that I am or the self-realization of the dominion of individual consciousness over external circumstances are a great step forward out of the limitations of orthodoxy. Numerous individuals are learning to heal sickness, poverty and all manner of inharmony through the teachings of metaphysics.